copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
So this is the workshop called the Flourish Mandate. As a bit of a background to how I got to talk about this particular topic is, years ago, I was a creative director at an ad agency, and I had a couple of creative teams that I was responsible for. And what I realized at that time is I was probably a pretty good manager, but I really wasn't that good of a leader. In other words, my teams got their work done, but I'm not sure that they enjoyed it, or they weren't necessarily being stretched, and I don't know that they were growing. I knew something was missing, but I wasn't sure exactly what it was. And then perhaps you've had this kind of experience where I came across this verse in Genesis, verse 15, Genesis 2:15, and it said, "Then the Lord God took the man and put him into the Garden of Eden to cultivate and keep it." And maybe you've had this experience, but it just jumped off the page to me because there was a couple of things. First of all, this took place prior to the fall. So Adam was given particular activities by God to do as part of his creative mandate. And first, it was to cultivate, which is to cause things and create an environment for things to grow and to become everything that they're supposed to become. And the keeping of it meant that you were supposed to put protections in place to keep and to prevent anything that would hinder that growth. So when you combine these two, what you really are doing as part of this mandate is to cause all that is under your care to flourish. And in other words, you want flourishing is not that you can become anything you want to be, but flourishing is so that everything that's under your care becomes everything that it's supposed to be. And I have an often real world example. In the first house that my wife and I had, we rented this house, and the people who had it before us raised earthworms in the garage. So they left the soil that the earthworms were in the garage, in these cabinets. And so we took that soil and we dumped it in a spot behind our garage, and we tilled it in and we made a garden. And that garden was amazing. Things just grew in a phenomenal way. Everything became very big and green and leafy. But as a result of that, we attracted a lot of wildlife. And so rabbits or deer or whoever just would continue to eat things. So I had to put a fence up to keep it from being eaten. So I was cultivating and keeping. I was causing all that was under my care in that respect in the garden to flourish. And then I began to realize that this is something that I could do in the workplace as well, too. So as I mentioned, I was a creative director, and my teams were effective, but I didn't think I was necessarily being a good leader. So I decided to call a meeting, and I started off by saying, I believe that everyone in this room wants to do a good job as part of our team. But without knowing, we are sometimes doing things that are hindering each other from doing our best work. And I believe that probably starts with me. So what I want to do is I want you to tell me what I'm doing from keeping you from doing your best work. Now you can imagine what that was like. I was the boss, and I had everyone on my team in this room, and there was dead silence when I asked that question. But I had brought a pad of paper and a pen, and I was willing to write down what were the things that I was doing that were keeping people from doing their best work. And so one woman spoke up. Her name was Susan, and she was my production manager. And she said, well, she goes, my responsibility is to make sure we get things produced to hit our deadlines, whether those are print brochures or ads to newspapers or television spots. But I can't release any of that work until you sign the purchase orders. And sometimes I put purchase orders on your desk and I might not hear from you for 2 or 3 days. And when you delay those 2 or 3 days, it means that I now have lost time to meet a deadline. So what would really help me is if you made sure that you looked at those purchase orders when I put them on your desk. And so I wrote that down and I said, I will give you my word that I will not end my day without either responding or signing the purchase order. If I have a question, I will get you the question. If not, I will sign it. And it was amazing to see what happened in that room because everyone looked at her and they realized I wasn't going to jump on her case. And so then other people began to share. And what was really fascinating is then the teams that had already been considered productive became even more productive. People started working in ways that they had never worked before. And then the thing that really struck me about that is there was a guy who stopped me in the hallway one day and he said, listen, I understand that you don't have any openings on your team right now, but if and when you do, could you please consider including me on your team? And even though I had never talked about what we had done, people were observing that people were flourishing and we were flourishing in our creative work and flourishing as a team. And so it became attractive to other people. And so I thought, wow, this is really something in terms of how we think about it. And that's when I began to realize that people are like plants. And that is that if the plant does not flourish, it's not the plant's fault, it's the gardener's fault. You can't put a cactus in a rainforest and expect it to flourish. And you can't put an orchid in a desert and expect it to flourish. If a plant doesn't flourish, it's the responsibility of the gardener. So it's critical that you understand what kind of plants you have and what environment you're bringing them into. And so as I began to interview people, we would start to ask these kinds of questions. Describe an environment in which you really feel like you flourished. And describe the type of leadership under which you think you have flourished. And I told them it doesn't always have to be a work setting. When I asked these questions, I would explain that I believe people are like plants and they need to be the right kind of plant in the right kind of environment to flourish. And what I said to them is, you know, I lead a particular way and we have a particular culture. And if you're the kind of person that can thrive in this environment, this is going to be really good. And if it's not, then I want you to know that so that we can help you find an environment where you can flourish. And these turned out to be great questions because it also told me how much they knew about themselves. And I remember that people would tell me different stories about where they thought they'd flourish. And as I said, it didn't always have to be a work setting. One woman told me about how she was in a drum corps, which is like a marching band, and how she led that. And another person talked about when she was in a drama program in school and the way that the director led. And so what it did is it really helped those people understand that what kind of environment we had and who I was as a leader and how they could flourish under that. But it also created some puzzling responses from people. In fact, at one point we were using a search firm and I had the guy who was helping us recruit for this position call me. He said, you know, some of the people you're interviewing are a little bit confused by your questions. And I said, why is that? And I said, well, you're not asking anything about the resume. And I explained to him that I wouldn't be talking to them if I didn't think they had the resume, because the way that I think about hiring is skills, team, and culture. So the first thing is, do you have the skills? And the second thing is, can you fit to be part of our team? And the third thing is, would you fit in our culture? Would you flourish? And this is where it's really important that you really understand the kind of environment that you are working in yourself and what kind of leader you are, and that you bring the right kind of plants into your environment. The other thing that I began to realize as I developed these thinking is different plants need different information to flourish. If you think about people as plants, some plants need more water, some plants need more sun. Well, the thing that actually causes people to flourish in some cases is information. And so you really want to understand what information people need. And years ago, this is a book that's out of print now, but years ago, I had an opportunity to read this book called Human Dynamics. And what this book is it's about communication. And I was fascinated by it because what it told me was that people need information in different ways to be able to move forward. And even the way this book is written, it said, if you're this kind of person, you want to read chapter one, and you want to read chapter six, and then you want to read the last chapter. If you're this kind of person, you want to just read in order, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, how many ever chapters there are. If you're this kind of person, you want to jump to the end and read the last chapter and then come back. In other words, they changed the way that they suggested that you read the book based on the type of person that they thought you might be. And so taking those principles, I began to apply them in terms of the people that were under my responsibility. So I'm going to give you some examples. I had a team member who had actually had not done well in other parts of the company. In fact, the person that he used to work for was actually thinking about maybe firing him, but he had applied from the department he was in to work in the department that I ran. And so I interviewed him and I thought he could do the role. But the one thing that I noticed about him immediately is that even though I might have five jobs for him to do, I needed to just give him one job at a time. If I gave him five jobs, he would do five jobs 80%. But if I gave him one job, he would be very, very successful at completing that because the information that he was getting was a little bit of too much overload. And then there was another person, and I called her a muller. In other words, what would happen is we would have a meeting and I would announce things to the team. And then I saw and observed that she would always come back maybe a day later and she would have some really interesting insights and ideas. And I realized that she was the kind of person that didn't think necessarily well on her feet, but she went away and she mulled over things and she came back and she actually had really good thoughts about what to do. So what I did with her is I built trust with her by giving her information ahead of when I gave it to everyone else. And our code, if I would walk into her office and I would say, you're a muller, and then I would say whatever I was going to say. Now, I took a risk there because if she violated the confidence, it would create some challenges, but she never did. And she knew that I trusted her and she became a hugely valuable asset to the team. And then the last person is there's a guy that was completely opposite of the first person that I talked to you about. He was a big picture guy. The first guy that I talked about, I just gave him the thing and he would just run after it. The third guy now that I'm mentioning, he needed to understand how the part that he was playing was part of the big picture. So with him, I would always start with this big vision and big picture, which is what motivated him and got him excited. And then I would bring it back down to what he needed to do to help make that picture and vision be realized. So in each of these cases, these three people all went on to be very, very successful, not only in their roles in my company or in the company that they were working for at the time and employed by or that I was responsible for. They actually have moved on. Two of them went on to become marketing directors in different companies. The other person, he moved to another department, in our company. And it was part of it was when they moved on, what I did is I talked to them and said, this is how I know you are. So you need to make sure that your new bosses and your new environment allows you to understand that. And then one of the things I also learned is you want to give people a good start. That's very, very important. So how you onboard them is a very, very important thing. So if you think about it, when you go to a country and you haven't been there and maybe you don't know the language, understanding sort of the layout, who the people are, what are some of the key phrases is very important. So what I did is I created something called a welcome to the team document. And it would have terms that we use because every family, every church, every organization, every company sort of has their own nomenclature and it becomes shorthand. And if you've been around the company for a while, you know that. But if you're new, it's like traveling to a foreign country where you don't know the language. The other thing is you want to understand who the people are. So you'll hear names of people, but you don't know who they are or where they fit in an organization. And then organizations typically have meetings. So what I try and tell people ahead of time is these are the meetings that you're going to be invited to. And here's the purpose of the meeting. I want you to not just see something on your calendar, but I want you to understand why this is happening. And then the last thing is these are the reports that you'll get access to, and give them the why, not just the what. And what I have found over and over and over again is this creates great success. In fact, what I tell them is in the first 30 days, I want you to understand all these parts. And just about everyone who's ever come to work on teams that I lead will have this document, and they literally will carry it with them for 30 days and make notes all over it. And I think that's the important thing that I haven't said yet is this isn't just for people that work directly for me. People who report to me but then are hiring for other positions also will use this. And then after 30 days, what I want to make sure is that they can start to put the parts together and really understand where the parts are. And then 90 days, they should start to initiate and make contributions. What I can tell you is that in almost every case, most people are way more productive and way sooner than in most organizations. In fact, this presentation that I'm doing for you today, I created years ago because we had hired a couple people from a university, and the university had heard from them how productive and how much they enjoyed their role. And so they asked me to come and talk about what do I do from a leadership standpoint, hence the Flourish mandate. I just laid out in slides what I've been trying to do. Now, there are some ramifications for this if you actually start to apply that. First of all, as I said, people are more productive sooner, but it also gives you insight on how to build time or how to build teams in time. And that's because when you understand these are the kinds of plants that you have, sometimes different plants will irritate another kind of plant. So if you're the kind of person who needs information and you need to have all the parts laid out before you feel comfortable moving forward, and you work with someone who knows where you're at and what the end game is and is comfortable making mid-course corrections along the way, those two kinds of people will irritate one another. And so what I have found is when you just make those things transparent and you show them how you can work together to actually be more productive together than you can be individually, you take away all that unspoken irritation. Another example is I'm not really high on detail. So I always have hired people that work with me that are really high on detail. Now, I tell them that going in, it's like, I value you because you're detailed. And the reason why is if you only work with people that are detailed and you don't work with people who are visionary, then you'll never move from anywhere because you always think of all the reasons why you can't do something. But if you have people who are visionary and they don't have people who are detailed, then things will never be successful because they won't have thought through things. So throughout my work life, I've always tried to have people who are very, very detailed because I can come up with the ideas, but I need and I value people. And so when you bring those kinds of people together, man, is it a lot of fun because they love to think through things and do the detail and plan and do all the spreadsheets and stuff. And then other kinds of people like to come up with the ideas. So it's really important. But it also gives you clarity on the person that you're working with. And that's really helpful too. Too often in teams, people have unspoken frustrations with each other and they don't know how to resolve it. So by understanding this framework of people are like plants, you actually give people the opportunity to say, you know what, I'm not that kind of flower. I'm not that kind of plant. I'm this kind of plant. And then as a leader, you help them understand how all of that works together to make things more productive. Now, I will tell you that there's two things that I've made mistakes on in this, and that is one, waiting too long to hire, and sometimes waiting too long to fire. You can ask all these questions, but it doesn't guarantee that you're going to be successful in hiring everyone. You will make some mistakes, either because the person hasn't told you honestly who they are, or perhaps they don't have the skills that you thought you needed. And what I've learned, and again, this is not a hard and fast rule, is usually if they haven't started hitting their stride in 90 days, they're probably not the right kind of person for the role. So you really want to make sure that you don't wait too long, because the longer you wait to take them out of the organization and help them find an environment where they can flourish, the more it affects the other plants that you're responsible for. And so you need to make sure that you move quickly. Now, as a leader that's charged with the Flourish mandate, One thing that you want to do, and I say this all the time, is you want people to leave better than when they came. So if you're a gardener, you want to make sure that you, when you look at your flowers or you look at your vegetables, that they're better because you've tended to them as a garden. So I tell people that when they work for us and they work on my teams, I want them to leave better than they came. Now, I don't always expect that they're going to leave, but sometimes they will. And this may sound kind of crazy to you, but one of the greatest joys that I've had is getting some of the resignation letters that I have gotten and received. And that's because it's just amazing what some of the people have said, how being here has equipped them for their next role and the things that they've learned. And while they've never ever used the word flourished, but they feel like they've really grown and they feel equipped and they've moved on. Some of the letters are almost apologetic for even leaving. But what they know is that I celebrate when people actually have opportunities to move, even if it's away from our company to somewhere else. Because if you think about it, if you have beautiful flowers, you have really, really luscious vegetables, people are going to be attracted to them. They're going to be drawn to the beauty of the flowers, or they're going to be drawn to the deliciousness of the vegetables. In our human nature, we're drawn to beauty. And so when you see a person flourishing in a role, they attract other people. And that's okay, because you've done your job, which is to cause them to flourish. And what I've also learned is relationally, you never lose that relationship. Those people will always be friends to you. They will always be loyal to you because they know that you've done something to help them move to the next role. And I found that to be the great joy as well, too. Now, the last thing I wanted to talk about is that this actually, as I've thought about this over the last couple of decades, it applies to more than just the workplace. One of the things that I began to understand years ago is that I have a role as a father, but I didn't really have a job description for that. And one of the things that my wife and I took seriously was this verse in Proverbs. It says, train up a child according to his way, and when he was old, he will not depart from it. Now, our understanding of that verse is every child has a bent in them, that just like a tree has a bent in them. And so what you want to do is you want to look for the bent in that child, and you want to encourage him in that way. And so as I thought about what it meant for me to be a father, I realized with our two daughters, I had four primary responsibilities: to protect, to direct, to provide, and to enjoy them. And so as a result of that, it really made for some joyful transitions. This is a job description that I talked about with them all the time, that this is my responsibility. And I also told them that there would come a time that I would likely hand those responsibilities over to someone else, their husband. And our first daughter, Emily, she got married to Paul. There's a picture of them. And I remember when Emily was about 11 years old, I was telling her that, you know, this is what I believe my responsibility is, but someday I'm going to hand that responsibility over to someone else, very likely. And she said to me, Dad, you can't do that. And I said, why? And she said, Dad, it'll scare them. And I kind of chuckled and I said, I don't think so, honey. And I'll tell you why. Number one, it won't be the first time that I've had that conversation with this young man. And number two, if he's the right man, he'll be up for the task. And so you roll forward to 5 years ago, and I stood there as I walked my daughter down the aisle, and a friend of ours said, who gives this woman to be married? And I said, her mother and I. But before I handed her hand to Paul, I basically said, as you know, my responsibility has been this. And with the, you know, immeasurable help of her mother, I've tried to fulfill these responsibilities. But today, along with giving you Emily in marriage, I'm handing those responsibilities to you. And then I said, you know, as Emily said, you know, maybe she was right. Maybe you are a little bit scared. But I said, we're not, because I think you're a man up. We think you're a man up for the task. Now, I did the same thing. This is our older daughter, and she's marrying, she was married just last January. So she's only been married about a year, a little over a year. and that's her husband, Daniel. And what I want you to notice is that both of these men are laughing and smiling. Now, I've just called them out in front of witnesses and said, you know, here's your job. Here's what I'm handing over to you. And yet they're finding great, great joy in that. And so that's why this, I think, leads to a very important, joyful transition. And so what's also great about it is they know going into this relationship with our daughters that that's their responsibility. When I was a young man, no one really made it very clear to me what it was to be both a husband and a father. And so it's created a different kind of relationship with my son-in-laws because we have a framework for us to talk about that. And I can just tell you, so far, both of these young men have just done an outstanding job as husbands for our daughters. And in the case of our son-in-law, Paul, as a father. And so we couldn't be more pleased. But they're clear on what their responsibility is, because in the end, these four things are intended to cause all that's under their care to flourish. I've talked about it in the workplace, but this is in the household as well, too. And then a couple other things to just share with you. What I've seen as I've unfolded this over the last couple decades is this also can make great decisions about college choices and majors. If you really know yourself and you know what kind of plant that you are and what environment you'll flourish in, you'll be able to make decisions about where you'll be and what kind of university setting you'll do and what you should major in. And it also is true about job decisions. I think understanding these things can sometimes help you turn down jobs, not just take jobs. And I can tell you, my daughters have each turned down jobs in some cases that would pay a lot more money than maybe the job that they had, but they knew it wouldn't be an environment in which they would flourish. And then knowing what kind of plant you are is very, very helpful. You can use this for your own well-being because you should flourish as well. And one of the reasons why I ask these questions when we do interviewing is because if someone doesn't know themselves well, they sometimes can just be making a choice to move into a position just because they need to do something. What I always say is I want someone to want this job, not just want a job. The other thing that's important is you really want to understand the company culture that you're going into. Families have cultures, churches have cultures, companies have cultures, organizations have cultures. So you want to make sure that you're moving into a culture that which you can flourish. People lead a particular way. Cultures are a particular way. And the reality is most people aren't going to change or influence those. And so knowing what the culture is can be very, very important. And then lastly, as I said earlier, you can figure out what jobs to turn down sometimes. I had that happen to me a while ago where I was offered a job and it was much more lucrative than the current one I have from a financial standpoint. But as I thought about it, I realized it wasn't a good fit for me. Even though on paper, I had the skills to do the job. Remember, what I think about is skills, team, and culture. And so you want to make sure that you're thinking about that as well, too. So the original job description for a leader is what I said at the outset. Cause all that is under your care to flourish. This is not anything that I came up with, but I think it was given to us as part of the creational mandate from the very beginning. It was given to us before the fall, and it's given to us now in whatever responsibilities we have. And I will tell you that over the last decades, I have applied this in many, many settings. I'm just sharing a few of these with you today. I can say with great surety that it works in the workplace, it works in the household, but I've also seen it work when I was coaching youth athletic teams with my daughters. When you take the responsibility that ultimately your job is to cultivate and keep and cause all that's under your care to flourish, you will be successful at not only building relationships, but actually seeing things become more productive. Because in the end, people will enjoy what they do and they will contribute in ways that you've never seen them contribute.